You are listening to the Anna Brandt Podcast for the year 2021. Anna Brandt has been a professional photographer for over 20 years and has taught worldwide in over 32 countries. She took a break from podcasting this past year, but she is back now better than ever, ready to inspire and motivate you. My name is Ava Brandt, and I'm happy to welcome you to my mom's podcast channel. We hope you subscribe and stick around.
Hi everyone. Today we're going to talk about how to deal with competition and why it's important. Now, you hear that comparison is the thief of joy, right? We know that when we start comparing ourselves with other people, it robs us of our joy, right? Have you ever been really happy with something? Now, I'm a photographer, so quite often my analogies relate to photography and photography sessions, but also motherhood and being a business owner. But in general, people compare themselves regardless of what job they're in, what situation they're in, who they are. We can't help it. We're human beings and we compare ourselves. You ever been in a situation where you may really like something? Maybe you had a really good session and you have a really good image and you want to share it with the world. And then you post it on social media and maybe you don't get a response like you thought it would. And then you start browsing in social media and you start looking at other people's pages and they're getting rave reviews from all their friends and family. And you thought your work was really good. And then all of a sudden that high that you're on, that level 10 feeling starts going down and going down and going down and going down, and you start feeling deflated. Because that's what it means when it says comparison is the thief of joy, is that joy that you have, all of a sudden, it's like a bounce house that has a hole in it. All of a sudden, all that happiness, the air just starts coming out of your lungs and you just start feeling less than happy, less than amazing. That's because you're comparing your work with others. You're comparing your response of your fan base with others. It happens to all of us. We're humans, myself included. And so we're so hard on ourselves because we think, oh, if only we could do this, or if we could make this much money. Let's take it to sales. Whatever sales you're in, you're looking for a specific sale or a specific win, and then you get it and you're so excited. And then you talk to maybe a colleague and theirs is maybe 10 times better. And then all of a sudden yours seems less than amazing. And so that joy that you had, that level 10 joy, all of a sudden, like that bounce house that's deflating, goes down and goes down and goes down. Now, will that ever go away regardless of how many podcasts you read and how many books you read and how many affirmations you do? Of course not, because we're human beings and we feel all kinds of things. We're going to have good days and bad days. But at the end of the day, I want you to think of how important competition is. And so, you know, there's competition and comparison. You're always going to compare. And so you've got to teach yourself to limit how often you compare yourself with others, and don't do it in a way that it robs you of your joy. Be happy with your success, because success varies upon different people. Success is based on your definition of success. You could be a stay-at-home mom and your definition of success is making sure everyone's still alive that day. Let's say you have little kids running around and they're jumping all around and they need to eat and be bathed and sleep. And if you can get through all that in the day and you're still alive and sane and your kids are still alive, that's a successful day. I mean, I remember when my kids were little and they're all 2 years apart. And there were days where my only desire that day was to get all of them napping at the same time before the trash truck came and woke up my son, which in turn would wake up my two daughters. If I could achieve that, that was success, right? So you can't really compare your day with somebody else, because somebody else's successful day may be completely different. And so we need to understand that we need to be comfortable in the little successes that we have and do our best to limit how often we compare ourselves to others. Now, that's all fine and good, but now let's talk about competition. Why is competition good? Why is it important? And how do we deal with it? And is there always going to be competition? And you don't want competition. You want to get to a point in your career where competition doesn't matter. Or is it always going to matter? So look, competition is important. And first of all, it's never going to go away. So you might as well find a healthy way to deal with it. It's just not going to go away. Take a look at all the big businesses in the world. There's Coca-Cola and Pepsi. There's Apple and Android. There's Samsung and Panasonic. I mean, we could go on and on and on with top brands and leaders, and we could say there's competition everywhere, right? But what matters? What matters? Well, first of all, sometimes what matters is who thought up the idea in the first place. Did you ever watch Shark Tank? I watch Shark Tank all the time, and I'm always referencing Shark Tank. And during quarantine and COVID and issues that I had in my life this past year, the only thing that was actually comfortable to watch, believe it or not, was Shark Tank. Why? I love listening, watching, and learning about businesses. Right now, I'm watching The Profit. That's a great show as well. And I love to learn from others. And you see these businesses where they're struggling and they've gone wrong, or they have this fantastic idea. And what do they say in the Shark Tank? Mr. Wonderful usually says, what is proprietary about this product? And if the person who's trying to get an offer doesn't feel that their product is proprietary, or maybe they do, and Mr. Wonderful says it's not proprietary, someone else could rip you off in 3 seconds. In fact, by the time this is live, somebody else has probably ripped you off already. Or as they're talking, the sharks will say, we already know people that have this idea, or we know big businesses that could rip off your idea in 3 seconds because they have the fulfillment center and they have the capacity and they have the financial dollars to do it. So why would we buy your, let's say, pillowcase dress from you and not go to a big apparel manufacturer that could make a pillowcase dress in 2 seconds? Why would we invest in a mom who's making a pillowcase dress at home? And the mom may say, well, because I was the first person that came up with this pillowcase dress. So, you know, I was the idea. I was the thought leader. I was the brand leader. And so the Shark Tank might say, well, that's great. That's fantastic. And if they think it's worthy enough, they'll invest in it. But then they have to say, we know competition's going to come. We know this is going to get ripped off. So we need to bring it fast to the market. We need to get name brand recognition so that people know you are the original person that came up with this product so that everybody wants to buy this product. And so what's important to say is in your career, when you come up with these ideas, is it important to let everyone know it was your idea and then everyone then copies you afterwards should give you credit? Well, it would be nice if it worked that way, but it's not going to work that way. But here's what does happen. You become recognized as a thought leader. You become recognized as an innovator. History books are filled with those who are innovators, people who were the first person to make the trail, people who were the first person to turn over a law. The history books are filled with people that were the first to come to Congress with something specific. History books aren't filled with the 10th person that copied the 9 people before them, right? So what you have to tell yourself is, gosh, I came up with this great idea. Maybe it's a product. Maybe it's a pricing structure. Maybe it's a pose. Maybe it's a dress. Maybe whatever it is. And then understand that if it's so amazing, competition is going to happen. It's going to happen. Now, will their product be as great as yours? Maybe not. But what if it is, and what if it's even better? Because how often does that happen? A product will come out to market and then, you know, that entrepreneur will look at it and be like, oh, this is a good product. But you know what? I can make this product 10 times better. And then they do. And it sells 10 times better than the first. Are they also an innovator? Of course they are. And our world has survived and grown and flourished based on innovators, thought leaders, and competitors who have said, great idea, now let's make it better. So what if we just got rid of all competition? Is that possible? No, we already know it's not. But let's just say in our utopian world, it was possible and they were all gone. What would happen? I think that would be bad. Why? Because we're not forced to come up with new ideas. We're not forced to keep innovating. We're not forced to make things better. And quite often, as humans, we can get very complacent, right? We can get very comfortable with the ordinary. I get comfortable with my schedule, with my routine. You know, I could do the same thing every day. I could wake up at the same time every day. I could eat the same thing every day. I could go to sleep at the same time every day. If you look in my closet, 75% of the clothes in my closet are black. You know, it could look like I'm wearing the same thing every day, and I would be perfectly happy because it would free my mind to do other things. But what happens when something gets thrown a wrench into our schedule and something doesn't go as planned? Or maybe that pose in photography didn't quite work. Or what if that product I'm using isn't quite as great? Maybe I can make it better, and maybe I can take someone's idea and make it better. So if I do that, am I an innovator? Am I a competitor? Am I a thief? Am I stealing their idea? Am I robbing them of their ambition and concepts? It can be such a cloudy world. Quite often, you see on social media and in the public world, in the retail world, the original dot, 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 fill in the blank, the original firm pillow that you sleep on. When a vendor says that, that means that they think they were the first person to have invented it, and they want you to know that they were the original inventor, and everybody else after that is a competitor. But what if all of their competition made that pillow better enough that that competitor took the market share? Does that take away anything from that innovator? Well, it takes away maybe a little bit of profit, absolutely. But maybe it would force that original innovator to rethink how he's doing things and make his pillow even better than the competitor's pillow, right? I'll tell you a perfect example in my own life. About 16 years ago, I started designing maternity gowns for the prop market in the photography world. Now, nobody was doing it at the time. Were people making their own dresses for photo shoots? Absolutely. People were making their own dresses for photo shoots. They were using scrap. I think that goes back as the old of time with photography, just draping fabric and shawls over women for photos. That's nothing new, right? But I decided to make a business of it. And I was having my third child, and I found a friend who was a children's clothing designer. And I said, you know, I have these ideas. It started with the diaper covers, because what I was doing early in my career is I didn't want to always photograph naked babies, but there was really no newborn prop photographers on the market at the time. So 22 years ago, the newborn market did not have a prop market per se, okay? So I would go to the Gap store, and I would buy, they used to have a bowl on their counter of leftover diaper covers that fell off of the rack or were misplaced, kind of like socks, from little girl outfits or little baby outfits that would have little dresses with diaper covers. And they would have this bowl of $5 diaper covers at the counter. And I just stumbled upon it because I would shop at the Baby Gap all the time for my son. So then when I was pregnant with a girl, I was just so used to going to the Baby Gap, and they had cute girl things. Well, I noticed this bowl of diaper covers. And I remember one day I was like, how much for this whole bowl? And maybe there were like 10 diaper covers or whatever in this bowl. And so she says, well, they're $5 each. So, you know, you get $50 and they're all yours. Great. I'm going to take all of them. She's like, but why do you want all of them? They're all different patterns and styles. And I said, well, because I'm a photographer, and I'm always looking for something to cover the diaper. And I think this would be perfect. And I love the different colors and patterns and ideas. I would love just simple, solid colors. And most of them were. And so I would kind of make it a routine to look for the leftover diaper covers. Well, one day I thought, why don't we just make our own diaper covers? And because I had a friend who was a children's clothing designer, she knew pattern makers and sewers. And she says, well, let me introduce you to some pattern makers, and you could make a pattern and make it fit newborn babies, because the ones I was buying from Baby Gap didn't really fit newborns. And so then I could critique it and adjust it and take that idea and match it to a newborn diaper. And that's how the first newborn diaper covers for the prop market in the photography world were created. Now, if you Google newborn diaper covers, they're all over the world. So do I like shout from the rooftops, hey, I was the first person to do this? Well, no, because I really can't, because I wasn't. Actually, the Gap was. And were they the first ones? They probably weren't either. So I don't necessarily own that idea, and you can't really patent that idea either. I mean, this is the whole reason of patents, right? You get a patent so that your idea is protected. But one change in the design can make the patent invalid. So patents are good only to a certain degree, right? Okay, so from there, I went to maternity gowns, and I had hired someone to help me with my children. And she happened to be an amazing seamstress. She's actually still with me to this day, 16 years later. Her name is Gabby. Many of you that are followers or customers know who she is. Well, her and I sat down pretty much at the kitchen table with me with my rough sketches on a napkin. I can't draw a stick figure, so my early designs were pretty interesting. And she would come up and sew these gowns. And it was just trial and error. Every time I had a pregnant woman come in, I would measure her. I would measure her boobs and her belly and her height, and we'd make a new dress. And then we had to perfect the sizing. Now, were maternity dresses on the market? Of course, they've been on the market forever. Was anyone selling them to photographers? Not really. A little bit here, a little bit there. Could you make me a dress? And what I would do is I would go to stores like Target. I don't think Target existed then, so I can't remember what store I went to. And I would go to the clearance section for the maternity section, and I would buy things on clearance. I would buy maternity dresses on clearance. I would buy robes. I would buy lingerie. And my closet was filled of clearance items that I would buy for 50 to 75% off. And that's how I built my client wardrobe. I still do that to this day. 22 years later, when I'm in a clothing store, I'm pretty much, you better be short, I'm going to go to the maternity section. I'm probably going to go to the clearance section, and I'm going to look for robes, shawls, lingerie, and I'm going to get inspired by some of these pieces that were created. So I can't say I created the maternity gown because I didn't. Am I the first one to bring it to the prop market in photography at the scale and the level that I did, selling it to over 80 countries and we had hundreds of designs? I'm pretty sure I am. And there were years before anyone else copied me. And I remember one of my assistants at the time, Stephanie, said, "Gosh, I can't believe nobody has copied you yet." And I was like, "Oh, it's coming." And it was probably a good 5 years before all of a sudden the newborn and maternity market was flooded. There were vendors popping up everywhere. And they were selling outfits and maternity gowns. And now you could find them not just from, you know, small mom and pop photography vendors, but from big time vendors that have added this to the market. And so it's a very, very big business, not big like the retail market, because the clientele is still only for the pregnant woman that needs pictures during a photo session. But people now wear them to sprinkles and baby showers and, you know, weddings, and they're pregnant. And now it's okay to be a pregnant bride. You know, back in the day, there was no dresses for pregnant brides. Now, I have nothing to do with that. But did I take a part in this revolution? Yes. Do I say, "Well, I own that market and no one should have copied me and I should patent all my dresses and it's not fair"? I'm pretty sure I probably cried a few times, was a little disappointed when a new design that I thought was brand new, that nobody had, that we created on a napkin at a kitchen table, was copied 10 times over. And maybe it affected me when other people got the credit and I didn't get the credit for it. And maybe it affected me when people would sit in my workshops and say, "Where'd you get that dress from?" And I was the designer. Do you know I still get asked that? And I'm going on 22 years of my career. I'll use a dress and someone will say, "Where'd you get that dress from?" And I'll just look at them like, "How do you not know? It's mine." Don't you feel that way in so many other aspects of your business? Well, guess what? I had to get over it. And you know what it forced me to do? It forced me to do many, many, many things. Forced me to, one, make sure I get over myself and not live life with an ego, which we quite often do, right? And two, it forced me to come up with new designs, right? Because honestly, had I not had any competition, I would have just stayed with the same designs for years, right? I would have created some new ones, but maybe I wouldn't have been so excited to create new ones. So it forced me to create new designs. And then, of course, every single design I've ever created has been copied. So then what do? Well, then it forced me to come and find new material that maybe nobody else has. And so I've traveled the world. So I've been in fabric stores in India and China and in Brazil and all different places where I've said, "Ooh, what if I bring this material back to California? I bet very few people will have it over here." I've brought beautiful silks back from India that nobody has here. And so then when I came back, I thought, "Well, I can't just keep, you know, leaving the country to get fabric. Let me look for fabrics that maybe not everybody has, that are different designs. So when other people are copying maternity gowns, we don't all have the same fabric." And if you look at other designers, they have the same idea. And I think any designer does. Any designer says, "Okay, I'm going to enter the maternity gown prop market or the children's clothing market or the newborn market," or whatever market you're entering, and you're going to say, "How can I be different?" And people will come to you and go, hey, can you make a dress like this? And you have the choice to say, yes, I can copy that exact dress, or maybe let me make something different. And that stems into my own photography. When a client comes in and they say, can you do this picture? And they show me a picture that I just did last week. The first thought in my brain is, I can do that, but I want to make it a little bit different because I don't want to copy my own work. I don't want to do the same picture I did last week because it's not going to motivate me and inspire me to show you new work. Because if I post that picture, it's the same picture I posted last week, different baby, different colors. So every single client, when they come into me and they show me photos of inspiration, whether it's maternity or newborn, and whether it's my own work or someone else's, in my mind, I'm quietly thinking, yeah, how can I make that better? How can I make that so it looks like my name on it? And how can I make it unique? And I think it's important. I think it forces us to improve our design. It gives us a reason to stand out and keep innovating. I've been asked to speak many, many, many times over my career because I've been an innovator. I've had people come to me during COVID, during quarantine. I think I did 10 or 12 different podcasts around the world during COVID when we were under quarantine because people were coming to me and saying, Anna, you're an innovator in the field. You're a thought leader. How do people handle this? They're shut down. What are you going to do? And I had a million ideas and I was bursting at the seams with new ideas. And so COVID has taught us to pivot and come up with new strategies and new designs and new ways of doing things. So competition does the same. It forces us to maybe not do the same as we did yesterday, or maybe look at our own design, our own creation, our own image, what we've done. And if someone takes that and does it better, you know what you should do? You should look at them and you should say, well done. You should say, well done. I teach. So a lot of students come and they do the same setups that I've done. I create the whole setup and they shoot it. So I'm not going to have them leave and say, don't post that image, or, you know, because I'm the one that set that up, because that devalues my teaching. I want them to learn. And if they need to learn by copying my exact setup and then going home and trying to do it themselves, that's great. And there are some photographers that I've trained and mentored for years that sometimes a picture will pop up and I'll double take. I'll be like, did I take that? And it'll look just like mine, the lighting, the pose. And I'll think, oh, there's something a little bit different, but wow, well done. That's really good. They nailed it. They nailed the posing, the lighting. They nailed the concept, the idea. And that puts a smile on my face. And so then I have to say, yeah, well done. That's awesome. And wouldn't it be great if we all cheered each other? And if someone does copy us and maybe they make it better than what we've done, instead of whining and complaining and say, hey, that was my idea. I thought of that. I stayed up in the middle of the night sketching out that idea. What if we just say, hey, cool, well done. And then force us to go back to our own sketch pads, our own blank canvases, our own empty film, and create something new and continue to be innovators and thought leaders. Because isn't that the point? Aren't we supposed to be a little bit better than yesterday? And aren't we supposed to be growing and thriving? And what if competition helps you do that? Because you know what? There can never be another you. There's only one of you. And some days you want two or three. I know, me too. But right now, there's only one of you. And so revel in the fact that you bring to the table only what you can bring. And if someone copies you, that's okay. Let them do it. Because they're going to bring their own tiny little unique and twist idea. And they can never be you. So revel in you, be amazing. And tomorrow, try and be a little bit better than yesterday. I'm Anna Brandt, and thanks for listening.
Did you like this podcast? We would love it if you gave my mom a kind review and reach out to her. To learn more about Anna, visit annabrandt.com. You can find out about her education opportunities at annabrandteducation.com.